Hey there, friends. Welcome back to another episode of the Texas Tales Podcast, the show where we talk about Texas history and enjoy ourselves a cocktail or two. I'm Ryan.
And this is Tracy. Why don't you pour yourself a drink and join us for what we're sure will be a stimulating, partially factual, Tales About Texas.
In today's episode of Texas Tales Podcast, we discuss the life and legacy of Judge Roy Bean, Jr. Judge Bean was a justice of the peace in Pecos County, Texas in the late 1800s. He called himself the only law west of the Pecos and held court in his own saloon. As a younger man, he lived his entire life on the opposite side of the law, and not much changed once he was the law in West Texas. Grab yourself a drink, sit back, and enjoy this episode of Texas Tales. Answer: Independence Trail Retail Company. Question: Hey man, where'd you get that sweet Texas swag? Independence Trail Retail Company is a premium brand retail company headquartered in Houston, Texas. Our faith, along with our heritage, are at the core of who we are as a company. Guided by these core values, we aim to provide high-quality products that tell a story and testify to the richness of our shared history as Texans. Over time, we will continue to add quality products in a wide range of categories that will include men's and women's apparel, glassware, leather goods, decor, and accessories. For now, go check out the website at www.independencetrailretail.com and treat yourself to some sweet Texas swag.
All right, the Honorable Roy Bean Jr. was living in New Mexico with his brother Sam in 1861. All right, so we're in the 1860s here, about Civil War time. During this time, the Confederate Army invaded New Mexico, but quickly lost their supply wagons and had to retreat back to San Antonio. So at this point, Roy had been in the New Mexico area for about a year or two with his brother. When the Army comes in, he decides, I guess, that he wants to basically join up and go with them back to San Antonio and be a part of the cause. So what he does is he ends up stealing money out of his brother's safe.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And then joins up with the Confederate Army down in San Antonio, which at that point, he basically starts running blockades from San Antonio to British ships off the coast of Matamoros.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So he's basically, that's how he's supporting the war effort, going down there, trading cotton, and then bringing back much needed supplies for the Confederate Army. Once the war is over, Roy basically stays in San Antonio for the next 20 years, and we see that he essentially lives a life as a shady businessman, okay?
Judge Roy Bean.
Judge Roy Bean, the Honorable.
The Honorable, shady businessman.
Right. So the first business he tries to do is he tries to basically run a firewood business by cutting down his neighbor's timber.
Well, he's going to steal his brother's money. Yeah. I'll take my neighbor's timber.
Right, it's industrious. Next, he tries running a dairy, but he's soon caught watering down the milk, which is, I guess, is a big no-no. Can't do that.
We've gone literally 5 minutes, and if that, and this guy is just unscrupulous.
This is literally his life. So yeah, so it's a no-no. You can't water down the dairy whenever you're trying to sell it, I guess. And then later, he works as a butcher, where he's rustling up unbranded cattle from local ranchers.
Sure.
So he's a cattle rustler.
Yeah.
Which I think is a big no-no.
It's a big no-no. I think it was pretty common. Still doesn't make it right.
Which actually kind of ties back into a previous episode that we did where there was just so much cattle in Texas running wild that, you know, it seems like you could do that. But it can't be other ranchers' stuff.
Like I said, I think it's frowned upon.
I wanted to start this episode with a brief touch point of Roy Bean in Texas. Okay. We're going to jump back to Roy Bean's earlier life to kind of give you some context outside of Texas. And you're going to see where he basically, this is his entire life. Like, he's the same character. Nothing changed when he got to Texas. It's just an extension of what he had already been doing. So let's jump back to when Roy Bean Jr. was born. He was born in 1825 in Kentucky. He was the youngest of five children, and he was born into a really, really poor family.
Okay,
so he didn't have much going for him in his early days. By the time he was 16, Roy ran away. So he's like, I'm getting the hell out of this place. There's nothing for me going on. And he ends up jumping on a riverboat down in New Orleans.
You love riverboats.
Love me some riverboats, man. Anytime I can include a story with a riverboat, count me in.
So he took the riverboat from wherever he ran to down to New Orleans.
Yep.
Okay. I mean, that seems to me like vice capital.
Yeah. I mean, think about the possibilities. You've gone from nothing. You've had a life of destitution.
Yeah.
And now the possibilities are endless. And honestly, I feel like if you have 16 years of being destitute, and you probably, it's probably ingrained in you that you got to scrape by whatever way you can.
Yeah, he's just going to make it, however.
However, and he doesn't really give a damn about the law. He doesn't give a damn about how he's able to survive. He's just going to survive. That's really what it seems like to me. Like, those formative years really set the tone for the entirety of his life, right? So he hops on a riverboat, and he heads down to New Orleans. Apparently, when he gets to New Orleans, he gets in so much trouble so fast that he has to skip town.
Like, he's basically like, I'm out of here.
He wasn't there very long. And to me, in the, let's call it early to mid 1800s,
yeah.
If you get to New Orleans and you've caused so much ruckus in New Orleans where, like, you've made a name and you got to get the hell out of Dodge, you're doing something pretty bad.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's impressive.
I agree. Right? I think it's still that way. Last time I was there.
So he kind of bounces around after New Orleans for a couple of years, and then he ends up meeting up with his older brother, Sam. And the two brothers found their way down to the Mexican state of Chihuahua, where they opened up a trading post. Now, again, they're not there very long, and young Roy Bean ends up killing a young Mexican desperado who apparently, according to Roy, had threatened to kill him. But no matter, because the Mexican authorities are going to charge him with murder. So the two brothers got to get the hell out of Dodge again.
Okay, so already he's a murderer.
Yeah.
At his young age.
At his young age, which at this point he's about 23, 24 years old.
Okay.
And if I'm his brother, Sam, I'm like, bro, like, we just got here. Like, we had big plans of opening up this trading post. We had some, obviously, we had some high hopes.
So you're saying that you believe, you'd like to believe, that his brother was a good guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I would think that his brother's, you know, at least was hoping to be there a little bit longer before having to skip town.
He's like, oh, my brother Roy.
This guy picked the wrong business partner, man.
He's the worst.
So they ended up piecing out of Chihuahua, and they find their way to San Diego.
San Diego.
So at this point, it's interesting because the story takes a bit of a turn. And at this point, Roy is 24 years old. He apparently has a bit of a bad boy image, obviously, right? And he's supposed to be very good looking.
Hmm.
So as any very good looking 24-year-old boy who has a bit of a mean streak and bad boy image, he attracts a lot of attention from the ladies.
Of course.
For better or for worse, this kind of gains him a reputation, and it makes life a little bit harder for him from the other guys in the area because he's got competition, right?
Yeah.
So one of the gentlemen that had an issue with Roy Bean coming into his territory was Mr. John Collins. In fact, Mr. John Collins was so upset, I guess because they had started courting the same woman, that Mr. Collins challenged Roy Bean Jr. to a shooting match on horseback.
Is a shooting match the same as a duel?
No, in fact. I believe the shooting match was originally meant to be somewhat of a sporting, showing off our machismo.
Yeah, and then she'll pick the best guy.
Yeah, and he felt, apparently, Mr. Collins felt pretty confident in his abilities. So I guess because Collins chose the sport of shooting matches on horseback, then Mr. Bean was left with, what are we shooting at?
Okay.
So
seems logical.
So right,
like a beer can.
Yeah, it's like tit for tat. Like, sure. I picked one, you get to pick whatever else, the last half of it. Roy Bean Jr. said, we're shooting at each other.
Oh, so he went to the duel.
So he escalated things quite a bit.
I see that.
And if I'm Collins, I'm like, damn it.
That's not what I was thinking.
That's not what I had in mind at all. I thought we were going to shoot at some clay pots.
Roy was pretty confident in his own abilities.
Well, the guy's already murdered somebody. I mean, you know, he's had a rough life, so sure.
Yeah.
Well, he's got to lose, I guess. So, long story short, he ends up shooting Collins in the arm. The two men get arrested for attempted murder. I think San Diego was probably trying to be a little bit more classy.
Clean up its act a bit.
A little bit more civilized. And they didn't really take it too kindly when two guys just start shooting each other. And
dueling out in the street.
On horseback. So Roy Bean Jr. winds up in jail. Now, at this point, it's well documented again that he has female admirers. It's not just the one woman that they were two, that him and Collins were courting, but there's other ladies in the fold. And so Roy Bean Jr. starts getting gifts, presents.
While he's in jail.
So he starts to get things such as wine, cigars. Mm. He's getting food, flowers.
These women love him.
They love him. And towards the end of his time in jail, and the reason why it was the end of his time, he starts getting knives that were encased in tamales, which I appreciate both of those things.
I'm thinking little Mexican senoritas bringing in the tamales.
Yeah. He ends up using the knives to tunnel himself out of prison a la Andy Dufresne.
Shawshank Redemption.
Mm-hmm. And escapes.
I can imagine. It's because I've seen Shawshank.
Yeah. I don't even have to go any further into that. Part of the story, because we all know what happens. He escapes jail in San Diego and ends up going up to San Gabriel, California, which in San Gabriel, California, he finds himself another young senorita and is courting her. Well, apparently she had caught the eye of a Mexican officer, and the Mexican officer assumed that he didn't stand a chance against Roy Bean Jr., so he kidnapped said senorita.
No.
And forced her to marry him.
The officer?
The Mexican officer.
Okay.
Yeah. Roy Bean Jr. doesn't take too kindly to this, and he challenges the Mexican officer to a duel.
Oh, this guy.
Where he ends up killing the Mexican officer.
So now he's a two-time murderer.
Yep. Yeah. Well, the Mexican officer had some compadres.
Well, he's an officer in an army. I'm assuming he's got quite a few compadres.
Yeah, and they took offense to the fact that this guy ended up killing the kidnapper friend of theirs. So the story goes that these six amigos put a noose around Roy Bean Jr.'s neck. They put him on a horse. And they slapped the horse on the ass.
I've seen this play out in movies,
said,
too.
And said, hi-ya.
And he's sitting there dangling.
The horse runs off, and Roy Bean Jr. is dangling by the neck.
And I'm assuming the story ends here.
No. The story in my mind is we have six Mexican officers that are shooting their guns off.
We got the bad guy.
Yeah, and whilst they're doing that, the Amor, his love interest, the young lady, comes out from behind a tree.
Stop it.
This is literally what the story says.
Stop it.
Because she comes out from behind the tree and she cuts him loose.
That.
And apparently, Roy Bean Jr. gets away. And the only way that I can think that he escapes six Mexican soldiers is that they unloaded their guns in the air.
They fired all their six shooters.
And they couldn't reload fast enough. And so he pieces out. And he leaves his love interest behind. He's like, thanks, later.
So his little senorita is hiding behind the tree.
Yep. I don't know if it's the same tree.
But sneaks around and cuts him loose, and he falls to the ground. And he escapes that and leaves her.
I'm assuming she has like a long sword.
It has to be a long
sword.
And
she leaps up in the air.
She has to get some air.
Missing his head. and splits the rope in half and, you know, he falls to the ground and they share a moment of embrace. You know, all the while, the Mexican soldiers are like scrambling to get their bullets.
That's an incredible story.
Yeah. That apparently happened.
Okay.
And so he had a rope burn on his neck for the rest of his life.
Did you say he left her at that point?
Yeah. At no point is she brought up again. She's not mentioned anymore. So I'm assuming they said their goodbyes. I would imagine she was able to like...
The Mexican
soldiers just let her leave.
Yeah, she vominos down.
They were
over
like,
there.
You know what? You're a good one. Just go this ahead. Yeah. Live happily ever after somewhere else. Yeah, but she's not mentioned again. So I view this as he had a rope burn on his neck.
Yeah.
And later in life, people were like, hey, how'd you get that rope burn on your neck? And he made up like this fantastic story of love that, you know, young love that was lost or whatever. When in reality, something super non-sexy happened.
The rope broke. He fell to the ground and scurried.
Or not even, right? Like, right. He ended up, like, he tripped at some point, mm-hmm. and got some kind of burn.
For the sake of Texas Tales,
we're going with the young senorita.
Of course, why wouldn't we?
Yeah.
Hey guys, ever want to feel like a kid again? Well, we've got the answer for you. Introducing e-riders, the first adult single-person electric vehicle. These things are badass. Yes, they are electric, but crazy powerful, rugged, sleek, and can travel 12 miles on a single charge. Whether you plan to cruise around the neighborhood in style, ladies, hit the beach, or quietly get in and out of your Dear Blonde, like I do, these fat tire scooters are the way to go. No tax, title, or license required. However you plan to use them, pick up one today. Support E-Riders, a Texas small business. That's E-R-I-D-E-R-R-S.com. That's right. Two R's in E-Riders. Financing available. Go pick up one today.
So
we don't write the history, we just tell it.
We just recite it, yeah. So after San Gabriel and Love Lost, he finds himself in New Mexico, where he takes up with his brother.
This is where we began the story.
And that's where we began the story.
Okay.
Okay. So now that we know what happened, he basically left and went with the Confederate Army. He winds up in San Antonio for 20 years, where he lives a life of, let's say, at least shady happenings. Okay. In the 1870s, Bean is still in the San Antonio area, and he's now operating a saloon when he hears about the opening up of several railroad camps in West Texas.
Okay, so this is as the railroad is expanding into West Texas?
It's moving west, right? And so he essentially views this as a business opportunity. And in 1882, he ends up establishing a small saloon in and around the Pecos River area. Okay. So he winds up in Langtree, Texas, which Langtree, Texas is on the Rio Grande. And it's about, I believe it's about an hour west of Del Rio. Okay. So if you've ever looked at the Texas map, you know, like the Rio Grande, if you're coming from El Paso, it dips down and there's like a bit of an armpit, right? And then it goes down all the way to South Padre. It's right up there in that armpit.
Okay.
It's in that area of the river, of the Rio Grande. He's in this area. And when he sets up shop, he's about 20 miles away from 8,000 railroad workers that are encamped. Okay. So he's basically just far enough to where he knows they're coming his way. He's setting up shop and he's planning on all this coming through.
That's going to be big business for him.
It's going to be big business, right? At the same time, he's roughly 120 miles, I think it was, or something from the nearest courthouse, which was in Fort Stockton. So Texas Rangers in and around the area were having a really hard time with keeping the law. Okay. And so one of the Texas Rangers basically requested that a local law jurisdiction be established, and they, for whatever reason, appointed Mr. Roy Bean Jr., Justice of the Peace of Precinct 6 in Pecos County.
You picked the wrong fellow.
I have no idea why they chose him.
What requirements were necessary for this?
I'm assuming he was the only guy with like a dwelling. Like with an established business in the area, anywhere near anything. And so they were like, you know what? You're it.
Judge Roy Bean.
Figure it out. You've got, like, you're out here. You want to be out here. Like, you moved down here. You're the guy. So deal with it. And that's how he ended up being the Justice of the Peace.
That is nuts.
I know. So there's all kinds of stories that take place around this. What's said to have happened is as soon as he was named Justice of the Peace, his first act was to shoot up a rival saloon or somebody that was out in the same area. And he was like, you know what? I'm going to kick this Justice of the Peace thing off with a bang and I'm going to shoot up my rival.
So he shoot up the competition.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, he decides that he's going to turn his saloon into a courthouse.
The saloon is the courthouse?
It's a saloon slash courthouse. And the way that it goes, or the way that history has unfolded at this point, is it said that he started calling himself the only law west of the Pecos, which, sure.
Yeah, I think you can make that claim. You can
make that claim for sure.
The right claim.
The jurors that were selected to hear the squabbles, right, were his best bar customers. And they were expected to buy a drink during deliberations and every recess.
So it's like going to a football game.
Yep.
And you have a one, two, or three drink minimum.
Yes.
I mean, you're going to be entertained.
You're there anyways.
You're going to be there anyways. You're entertained. You might as well participate in the trial.
Yeah. Why not?
Sounds logical.
Right. So one of the stories is that upon finding the corpse of a Southern Pacific Railroad workman who had been killed after he fell from a high bridge over the Pecos River, the man, it had been discovered, had been carrying a pistol and he had $40 on his person when he died. The judge, Judge Roy Bean, the Honorable,
the J.O.P.,
rendered a verdict there on site of accidental death and then imposed a posthumous $40 fine because the man had been concealing a weapon.
God.
Yeah. Another story.
By the way, I don't think you can find the deceased.
I don't know that that's how it works.
Yeah, I don't think that is.
Yeah. I mean, what is he like? He just like walks up, like he ends up finding a body and he's like rifling through stuff and he's like, you've been fined. Yeah. So the next story goes that there was a train passenger that had frequented his saloon. The passenger tossed him a $20 gold piece.
Oh, sure.
Right?
Yep.
For a beer. The passenger then expected, like any normal person would, a change.
Yeah, like $19.95 back. Because right. I think it was about a nickel at the time, right?
Yeah. So Bean refused to give any change. When the stranger protested, Bean fined him $19.95 for contempt of court and threatened to double the fine.
Was it really $19.95? Yes, it was. Oh, I was totally making that up.
If the stranger said another word. So he would have doubled the fine had the stranger contested it at all. I mean, the guy was a character. And literally, this is, he's not a good person.
No, he's not.
Like, he's really not.
No.
And I don't want to, I get it that he grew up in a certain way and he had to like, whatever.
Right.
Get by.
Yeah.
But at no point does he like turn.
No, he doesn't turn a leaf.
The leaf or anything like else. Like, he's just.
He is that guy.
He is that guy. And he just happened to get.
He's a swindler.
He's definitely that. He's definitely that. Another story is some districts apparently didn't allow, I guess, divorces. So you could only have like district courts that would allow it. You couldn't just be like some random guy on the river. And but apparently Bean was just dishing out divorces left and right. $10. You want to be divorced? $10. So, you know, honestly, there's just on and on and on. There's these stories of these shady dealings that he does in his barroom / courthouse.
What a character.
Yeah.
But you know that if you knew him, you were like, that son of a.
I know.
Hate that guy.
Freaking Bean. So another thing that's fascinating to me is that apparently there were elections.
Apparently
that was a thing still. He won re-election to the JOP position in 1884, but was defeated 2 years later in 1886. The following year, in 1887, the commissioner's court created a new precinct in the county. So from precinct 6 to this new precinct where he had been outvoted. And he gets appointed to the JOP in that new precinct.
Just moves
on down the road. And he ends up being reelected all the way up to 1896.
That is a career.
Dude, it's a career. He ends up doing the same shenanigans. And it's not like, again, changed to, like turned over a new leaf or changed his ways. Like, he's just doing the same thing.
Being shady character.
In 1896, he's still the JOP. And then he ends up dying in his sleep peacefully in 1903 after what is called a heavy bout of drinking in San Antonio. like this guy, at some point, I got to be a little bit envious of him because he did whatever the hell he wanted to do his entire life.
He did not care.
Did not care. And it just worked out for him.
Yeah.
So how crazy is it?
And it seems like he lived generally a pretty long life.
Yeah. From 18, whatever it was, 20 something to 1903. That's a damn good life to be out struggling in West Texas.
Yeah. Just taking advantage of people. The whole thing that I wanted to, I was thinking the whole time you're telling about this JOP is I wanted to say something like, this JOP is an SOB.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that was what was going through my mind the whole time.
Yeah, it's just really fascinating to me that he was not at all the person that should be upholding the law, but in West Texas, it just seemed like worked out.
I think in West Texas, it was any warm body, and he assumed it. It worked out.
There was some form of law, whether it was the actual law or whatever, at least it was something, I guess.
I mean, it doesn't surprise me, but I guess we sit here today and you think like, well, there should be checks and balances. There was it literally was the Wild West.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, there was no checks and balances.
And so Judge Roy Bean ends up gaining national attention and becomes kind of a, I guess, folk hero in some weird way, because he is able to get a hold of somebody who's, I think, passing by on a train through Langtree, Texas. Uh-huh. And he gets their attention and is able to actually hold a heavyweight boxing prize match near Langtree, Texas, in the middle of the Rio Grande River.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I think from what I read, or I'm not necessarily too sure on this, but it seems like it might have been illegal in Texas and it might have been illegal in Mexico to hold this fight.
So do it in the river.
And so he did it right in a sandbar in the middle of the river of Rio Grande.
Was it well attended?
I think it was, yeah. I mean, anybody and everybody in the area. I mean, I don't know that it was a ton of people.
Yeah.
But the rumor also is that Texas Rangers came to shut it down. And he's like, there's not a damn thing you can do about it. Why don't you go down there and just watch it? And they did. So they went down there and they caught themselves a prize match.
Sure.
And so I guess word got out about this, and it, I guess, got to the papers. And so he grew with this, like, infamous, you know, character in West Texas. And I guess it was romanticized. And so, dude, there's movies, there's TV series, like Western TV series from like the 50s and 60s, where he's literally like romanticized as the hanging judge in West Texas. When in fact, he only ever sentenced two people to hang and one of them got away. Everything was all fines. So like, he was never...
Yeah, he was taking it to the bank.
It was never the law. It was all about what he could put in his pockets.
Yeah.
So he would just fine everybody. And at no point did he turn any of that money into the state of Texas. He just kept it all.
Yeah, it's going in his pocket.
Right. So a really fascinating character.
I've heard of him, but I had not heard about him.
So did you know this? There is there's a wooden roller coaster at Six Flags in San Antonio, and it's named after him. It's like the Roy Bean something or other, or the Judge Bean, I don't know, something. But it's literally in honor of him.
Huh.
Yeah. And there's several other, there's like bars, there's barbecue restaurants all over. And it's all like in honor of this guy.
The hanging judge.
The hanging judge.
Who didn't really hang anybody. One.
The only law west of the Pecos.
Awesome, man. Good episode.
Yeah. Cheers, brother.
Thanks for sharing.
All right, friends. That's going to do it for this episode of the Texas Tales Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure and give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. If you'd like to keep up with us outside of the podcast, you can find us on Instagram at TXTalesPodcast, or you can visit our online store at www.independencetrailretail.com for all things Texas swag. I'm Ryan, and that's Tracy. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.